Have you ever spoiled a race for yourself? Are Red Bull cars harder to drive than Toro Rosso's? And just how physically demanding is it to drive a Formula One car? Those things and the Singapore Grand Prix review coming up on Formula Fun. Stick around, y'all. Underprepared, bro. Okay, here's the story of this race for me. I accidentally spoiled this race for myself.
I've done that. It's hard. You gotta go on a social media blackout.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you can't do it.
Yeah, because I had a day Sunday, man. I had a day of babies Sunday. Hold on, let me adjust.
Baby shower?
Baby shower. Baby birthday, baby shower. It was just a day of babies. And so I couldn't watch the race until late. And out of just pure habit, like I just click open my browser, I click on Autosport because it's just like a muscle memory, you know?
Right.
And really fast internet, it opens and just goes bam, bam, bam. And there's a picture of Vettel and it says Vettel something. And I was like, and like closed my phone.
You were just like, some shit must have gone down.
Yeah. And I was like, and I got home and I told Caitlin and I was like, I think I spoiled the race. And she said she had spoiled it for herself too. And so I was like, oh my God, well, I guess Vettel wins somehow. And she was like, yeah. And I was like, oh no.
She's like, I follow on Twitter Live. I just never tell you.
Yeah. Yeah. Instagram more like it, but.
Well, so you watched practice, right? So you saw that Mercedes was like clearly the fastest car.
Yeah. Mercedes was the fastest car on race pace all weekend long, practice and qualifying.
Until qualifying.
Uh huh.
And see, did you watch qualifying or did you?
I watched practice and qualifying. Yeah, no, I watched qualifying. Yeah. Was super exciting, man. That was thrilling. Qualifying.
I mean, at least for this season, I have yet to see a bigger change between a car that quickly. So,
yeah.
And I know what they did. So I know they have they put some carbon like capes behind the nose.
Uh-huh.
And carbon fins along the side and installed a new floor.
New floor. Yeah.
New floor to kind of do the Venturi effect to increase the airflow and increase the downforce. But like, it was like an earthquake in Formula One. Cause all year we've been waiting for Ferrari to match Mercedes on these cornery curvy circuits.
Yeah. Now they've done it. Oh, they only could have done it earlier, we would have had a championship on our hands. And now it's like Ferrari could win every race for the rest of the year and Mercedes would still win the championship.
You know, I was thinking that, and then it's like, okay, if I'm seeing the fins and exactly what the cape looks like and social media, like, there are going to be versions of this, obviously probably not as efficient, but there are going to be versions of this on other cars, if not in practice.
At least, sure.
You know, we have to catch up, we have to, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay.
But yeah, so, I mean, this is the first race I've ever bet on in Formula One, too, and all I heard was Red Bull's great, Ferrari.
Uh-huh. I know.
Well in Singapore, and I ate it.
I know, you ate it up, didn't you? I told you to bet on Max Verstappen, that didn't go so well, did it?
No, it didn't. Well, I mean, one of my biggest takeaways from this race was that Max is just superhuman.
Yeah, he's incredibly good.
He beat both Mercedes.
Mm-hmm.
Albon, I mean, in just seeing how well Gasly performed and seeing like how well Ricciardo's doing in a lesser car just shows that it's not like people aren't doing well in the Red Bull seat. It's just that Max is such a level above, I think, anybody else on the grid right now.
Yeah, that's not unwrong. I the only other driver that is maybe better than Max is obviously Lewis, but you could even argue Lewis is having a down year this year, even though he's leading the championship. And there's been talk too recently, like with Alex Albon switching into the Red Bull and Gasly switching back to the Toro Rosso and performing well, that Albon has been talking about how the Red Bull is like harder to drive. And you've seen Pierre being able to drive the Toro Rosso better than he was able to drive the Red Bull, because it's like easier to drive it. Like it's just a simpler car to drive.
Power.
And yeah, it just speaks even more to Max's talent that he's able to harness or sort of, control such a difficult to drive car, such a car that commands so much of your skill.
Did you listen to the Behind the Grid, Jos Verstappen episode?
Yeah, I did. Yeah. That's a good one.
So one thing that, one of my big takeaways, and now I'm cluing into it now that my mind's thinking about it, is how physically demanding it is to drive these cars.
Especially at Singapore.
What Jos kept reiterating was what he would have done more if he could go back was, he kept saying physical training, strength training, like actually being able to maneuver the car on the track, which is probably that he has just driven into Max since he was, as he said, like 4 years old when he put him in a kart or whatever it was. That's why he's so much better on a car that if it is, you kind of need to
difficult to drive. Yeah, that's a good point. That's one of the things Michael Schumacher was famous for, was just being so physically fit. He would bring his home gym everywhere with him. He would travel with his gym so that he could work out.
You think that because episodes before it was traction control that made him better.
Oh, well, that too. Well, that's how he cheated. But
well, that was one thing. They asked Jos that question and he said, I could tell you, I have heard the rumors, but I could tell you one thing. I never had it.
I didn't have it. It wasn't in my car. So that was when they were at Benetton. Yeah. Cars?
Wouldn't they be putting it in both cars?
Not necessarily. Both drivers don't always get every technological upgrade in both cars. That's not always the case. Like, look at Haas right now. They're driving two different cars, basically, technologically.
Yeah, Ferrari may be sharing an engine with them, but they're not sharing the aerodynamics.
They're definitely not sharing that.
So a lot of people obviously know Max, or Matt knows a lot more about Formula One than I do, but I've been watching the little yearly review series, and I started at 2000 because it was a nice round number, and I'm up to, I think, 2012 now.
Wow.
It's been about 32 hours.
I've been watching some of those too, by the way. I started a little bit before 2000, but yeah, go ahead. Finish what you're going to say.
Well, it's been just so knowledgeable, and the best. Yeah. Like, if anybody doesn't know anything about Formula One, like, go onto YouTube and watch these, because especially when it's amazing to see the longevity of these drivers. A lot of the guys racing, even in the early mid 2000s, are still racing now. And it's just crazy to see the team shifts and waves and everything.
Teams come and go, like Jordan. Yeah. Arrows.
I lost my train of thought, but going back to qualifying.
Yeah.
So the whole big debate this whole race has been Vettel versus Charles, and Charles had pole and he was leading the race or whatever. But if you watch qualifying, Vettel was the quickest pace up to that last lap where he clipped the barrier on that corner. Where you're right, he made a small mistake and he retired that lap, but he was 4th of a 10th of a second slower than Leclerc, Q1, same time Q2, and Leclerc beat him by 200ths of a second in Q3. But honestly,
but Vettel could have had one more chance in Q3.
If I would have known before that Vettel had won 4 times at Singapore, and basically, you could say has dominated the circuit, probably feels so comfortable here, only has good memories here.
You would have bet on Vettel.
Would have won, changed the way I bet. Hello. But two, I mean, honestly puts the edge. So we'll get into this later, and we'll talk about that later, about the whole thing, how it happened, and how some people think it should have happened one way. Some people think it happened the way it just happened out, and that's racing. But I'm looking at qualifying now, trying to see anything else. So I just want to talk about Haas for a second.
Yeah, go for it.
I was watching another one of those little reviews, and one thing that stood out to me, a guy goes, you know, there are good racing drivers and there are fast racing drivers.
Uh-huh.
And one thing you always say about Grosjean when you're talking about good things about him, you say that he can be really fast.
On his day, he's fast, yeah.
But that doesn't mean he's good.
No, he's not good, yeah.
And you saw it last week, and you see it consistently where he wrecks, and guys get on the radio, and they're like, what is he doing? Like,
I should have known better or something, whatever Russell said, yeah.
He's not a good racing driver.
No, probably not, yeah.
He was sick, and he's not fast. He was 0.6 of a second faster than the Williams. That's it.
In Q1, yeah.
Stroll beat him. Kvyat beat him. He was only 0.4 off Magnussen, so maybe it shows that just the car wasn't great for that week.
Or was set up for race pace, maybe not.
Mag at least made it into Q2. I mean, if you're a midfield team that got, beat Renault last year, you should be getting into Q2 more than you're not.
For sure. Yeah, Grosjean is quick on his day. In fact, there was an article in Autosport just recently, I think it even came out today, about how Grosjean is the most infuriating driver in Formula One because he can be so good when he's fast, but he's so inconsistent and so poor when he's bad. And one thing
I learned, though, too, being a new fan, is like Grosjean started racing in like 2002.
Yeah, he's been around.
He's been
on the podium.
He could be a perfect behind-the-scenes guy. Like, he might be one of those just, like, kind of is so good behind the scenes. And a lot of people say the reason that Hülkenberg isn't at Haas next year is because of the money.
Yeah.
Because he take $1.8 million a year instead of, like, $8 million.
Yeah, and I hope that's true. I mean, that's sad to say, I guess. But I hope that it's because of the money, because if they're doing it for other reasons, they're trying to justify, like, well, Grosjean has the experience with the team, and Grosjean, I mean, that would really be the only other reason, is Grosjean has the experience with the team, and he's been here, and he knows the cars, and he knows the people, and all that, and whatever. Thinking of him in, like, a development role, but if it's the money, then that makes sense to me, because Haas is a small team, and money makes a big difference to a small team.
And I hope they didn't peak last year, but I mean...
Ugh, I hope so, too.
If they were a stock, you'd be selling it, basically.
Yeah, ooh, speaking of selling, and Haas, there's even rumors, although unsubstantiated, that they might be up for sale, which would be super sad. Super sad.
Are there any rumors on who's been itching to get back into or into Formula One for the first time? Hopefully not Virgin again.
You mean buying them? Buying Haas? Well, it was Rich Energy who tweeted about this, which is kind of like...
So it's 3 a.m. and the guy was on...
Yeah.
Still has access to the Twitter account.
Exactly. And so he tweeted, he was like, best of luck to the Saudi investors who are buying Haas. And then everyone at Haas was like, absolutely not. We have no idea what he's talking about. That's not a thing.
UAE Emirates and McLaren just partnered in cycling. UAE Emirates has had a cycling team for about 10 years. They've been terrible, and they don't have enough resource and coaching, but they just brought on McLaren as a secondary sponsor.
Okay.
So when I hear Saudi Arabia in Formula One, I don't necessarily toss it out the window. But
no, I mean, there's money there.
When I hear it from Rich Energy's mouth.
Right.
And
yeah.
Interesting.
But I don't know. I did hear on another podcast too that there was other rumors about Haas being up for sale. It's just a matter of, I think, how competitive they feel like they can be over the next few years and how dedicated Gene Haas is to the sport. But
yeah,
I think he's super dedicated to it. That's all you ever hear. All you ever hear about him is that he's fully dedicated to Formula One and he's got bukus of money. So, yeah,
which doesn't necessarily mean he is. It just means he wants to keep getting bukus of that money.
Yeah. but anyway, we can come back to Haas, I guess, later when we get into the race. Speaking of qualifying, coming back to that, I thought qualifying was more exciting than the race.
That last lap of qualifying was maybe the most exciting qualifying lap of the year.
Yeah.
One, because you have one of the big teams who was not supposed to be doing anything, just like suddenly at the head and everybody else kind of scrambling. And just, I gotta say, I love night races.
Yeah, it looks good.
I wish Austin was a night race.
That'd be cool. I don't know how they'd light it up. I mean, Singapore is so well lit. Dude, so it looks like the street is glowing.
They kept saying 1,600 bulbs. That had to be a mistake. There's no way that's 1,600 bulbs. That's like 160,000 bulbs.
Oh, it's got to be more than that. Maybe 1,600 lights. Maybe more than...
More than that. That is daytime. Because then when you see the contrast of the cars just like traveling over an overpass where they've cut the lights to get the contrast.
Yeah.
They just have their little headlights and they can barely see.
True. True. But, it looks really good, though.
Next year, drinking game, every time they mention that infinity pool and how great it would be to watch the race from that infinity pool, that hotel.
Okay.
You have to finish your drink. They mentioned that thing 16 times.
That's so funny. Okay.
That there is an infinity pool.
I'll try to remember
three
that.
3 miles away from the circuit.
That's a good idea, actually, to have a drinking game for every race. Like for Hungary, every time they say Monaco without the barriers, you know, Singapore, Monaco of the East.
I said, we got Russia next. I don't know anything about the Russian circuit.
When they say low tire degradation, that's what it would be. That's what it would be for Russia, because there's such low tire deg there. Smooth circuit, low tire deg, finish your drink.
We don't need to get into that. But
yeah, we can get into that later.
Yeah, I think qualifying was awesome.
Qualifying was awesome, especially because, you know, I'm a Charles Leclerc fan. That last lap when I was like, come on, come on. And then just to watch him go boop up to the top of the to the pole position, you know, and just, yes. Oh, man, that was super, super thrilling. That is just exactly what you watch the sport for. That was super, super, super exciting. And that. And then you have, Ferrari starting 1 and 3, I guess. So it was Leclerc, Hamilton, Vettel, Verstappen, Bottas to start 1 through 5, I believe.
Yep. And then Albon right behind Bottas, and then Sainz. And then surprisingly, a guy who did really well in the race but didn't qualify well, Norris.
Norris. Norris finished best of the rest. Yeah.
He was ninth in qualifying, effectively 10th, because must have been a DQ. Perez didn't score a time.
Or was it Ricardo? Perez. Ricardo got screwed Ricardo had some kind of penalty where his MGUK like squirted a millionth of a second too much, and he got screwed.
He had to start at the back of the field, but he still made the Q3.
Okay.
Which just makes sense for why the place was moved up, because he had to start at the back of the field.
Yeah.
So do you understand that? Was that just maybe an engineer not having something on the right setting where was it storing too much power in the reserve system?
The way I understand it is that it had something to do with contact with a curb, and like as the car hit the curb, then the MGUK like reacted in such a way, or MGUH, honestly, I don't remember which one it was, reacted in such a way that there was like a spike in power. But I think it was literally like 1 millionth of a second difference. And it wasn't even Ricardo's fastest lap in that it was like his third fastest lap. So it's like a millionth of a second on his third fastest lap. And he had to start on the back of the grid because of that. Hold on one second.
Yeah. I think he gets to pick his own tires then, though, right?
See, that's a good question, because I don't know if he made it into Q3, but then also has to start in the back. Well, but he didn't make it into the top 10. What? That's Q3. That is Q3, top 10.
Yeah, he didn't make it into the top 10.
Okay,
he
never mind.
Fare that well during the race. But.
Yeah, duh. I don't know what else to say about qualifying, honestly, besides it was super exciting and the Ferrari's obviously surprised, and now we have Ferrari just on the scene.
Ferrari's just taking one sip and spitting it out of champagne that night, going, we got them, boys. But yeah, just a total contrast to the excitement of qualifying was just this crazy, slow, albeit, you know, strategic pace car of a start.
So here's my question to you. I've been interested in asking you this question since I've been looking forward to this pod. Was that a boring race?
No, because I was clued into why they were doing it and why it was going on. But to a fan that isn't clued into that or is not staring at the TV, listening to the radio of all the drivers and the cluing into the announcers knowing why they're doing it, it would be a very boring first 50 laps.
Yeah, okay. Which is most of the race.
Which I also want to talk about later because I think that race with that long a circuit is too long.
And that
and the other factors clue into what forced what we saw.
Yeah, true.
But
it's too long. They do a pit stop, and then you still have like an hour and a half to go.
So they're basically running 148 laps. First 20 laps, and you have Lewis Hamilton saying, "Look, I can't go any slower," which mm-hmm. I guess means like he can't go any slower without losing degradation in his tires and having to do, you know, the little shakeroo.
Yeah.
But, and then the first like 20 laps, the fastest guys on the track
were Russell and Hulkenberg. Yeah.
Backfield guys. So,
yeah.
And it's funny because this whole strategy is what I think contributed to what happened to Charles. And I don't think nothing was done on purpose of what happened to the race. The race unfolds how it did because of part of this factor. So, Before we get into what happened, I think one, the race is too long. It's one of the longest circuits and it's still like 60 some laps
because they
were talking about having to time out the race.
I know. Yeah. They've had to time it out like 4 out of the 11 times it's happened. Yeah.
It's that like weather where it's the leader on the previous lap wins.
I think it's like, it's been 2 hours. This is the final lap or whatever, or what? I don't even know. Honestly,
they end it for another reason. If they've gone enough laps, it's the guy who was leading the previous lap that went.
Okay.
Or girl. But so here's some of the cause, I think, why this circuit needs adjustments or why we saw what we saw. The pit lane is like 3 miles long.
Right. It's like 30 second pits. Yeah.
Nobody's wanting to pit. It makes pitting just kind of takes away kind of the advantage of pitting, getting fresh tires, mixing it up, which kind of different strategies, which makes races exciting on their own.
Right.
And isn't the pit lane slower than normal there?
It's slower, not slower than normal, but pit lanes differ in their speed. So like some of them are 80 and some of them are 60 kilometers. And I think this one was 60.
If there's any place to be 80 or 100 kilometers and maybe put it in, it's here at Singapore. And they'll probably figure this out and do it. But so basically everybody's racing around waiting to see who's going to try to undercut who or pit first.
Right.
And this is what I think started everything. Max pits first. And I think that is the only reason that Seb pitted, is they have Seb pitted to cover his undercut.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
So I watched Nico Rosberg has a YouTube channel and he had a little recap on the race. And he said that in the Ferrari models, it showed that with Seb pitting at that time, he was going to come out 1.5 seconds behind Charles.
Yeah.
Now, Charles maybe didn't know that they were pitting and he probably
didn't know that they were pitting. They admitted that.
And that is mistake or maybe negligent or factor number one.
That's a huge factor because Charles can't push.
Yes. Because normally, if he would have known that, he would have started pushing immediately.
Absolutely, he would have pushed, and he would have maintained his lead, probably.
Factor number two, I don't know how the pit stop was, but apparently Seb put out, like, the lap of his life.
Yeah, Seb had an amazing out lap, too. Yeah, because Seb...
Like, on cold,
fresh rubber. Yeah.
And so, if he would have had a normal out lap, Charles would have been in front. If Charles would have known about the pit stop, he still would have been in front.
Yeah.
But he didn't.
And if Charles had known he was pitting.
Here's another thing, though. Mercedes did a very similar thing with Bottas.
Yeah.
They purposely
held him up.
Slowed Bottas down.
Took one for the team. Yeah.
But that, to me, is a status quo issue. This is not like a, you know, Schumacher, Barrichello, or whatever situation. Seb is the former multi-world champ.
Right.
4-time winner. Here he's making whatever. Charles, you're still the new guy. We love what you're doing. But there's still some rough patches.
Mm-hmm.
And he's still got to fight and claw for everything because he is still, I guess we saw now, the second-tier guy.
Yeah.
Like, even apparently when he won at I think it was Monza, the director came on Italian and said, "You are forgiven." Like, it wasn't like, "Congratulations, really? Charles." It was like a, "You are forgiven." Like,
oh, no, still... that's deep. That cuts deep.
So,
to me, I think what it comes down to with the whole Seb undercut thing, whether they did it on purpose or not, I think they know the undercut is super powerful at Singapore. They do know that. They talk about it during the race about how powerful the undercut is at Singapore. I don't think they knew it was 4.5 seconds powerful or whatever that undercut ended up being. You know, that was a massive undercut, like you said. Yeah. Seb had the outlap of his life or whatever, and Charles didn't know to push. But I think what it boils down to, whether they did it on purpose or not, is that for Ferrari, like, Ferrari is always first for Ferrari. Like,
yeah, 1-2 is the most important thing.
1-2 is the most important. 1-2 is the most important. And it was going to either be Charles wins and they finish 1-3, or Sebastian wins and they finish 1-2. And when they when you take it in, take everything into account, this is Ferrari, and 1-2 is better than 1-3. And so we don't really care who wins. We want to finish 1-2. We want a 1-2 finish in Singapore and be the first constructors to ever finish 1-2 in Singapore. We haven't finished. I don't think Ferrari had finished 1-2 since 2017, I think, yeah, if I remember correctly. So
here's my take, and you might not like it, but once Seb got past Charles,
yeah,
after he pitted, which if it was Mercedes, Bottas would have held back. We all get that. But Seb outraced him the rest of the race.
Seb had a great race.
He consistently pulled away from the rest of the race. There were three safety cars, and he consistently pulled away from the rest of the race. He was gaining a tenth of a second every lap on older tires.
Yeah, yeah. No, don't
Charles
get me wrong.
Charles was never even in DRS. He was never even in DRS zone, and he was racing with them, and he had race mode plus or whatever they
A1 plus or whatever it's called. Yeah, don't get me wrong, because I'm a Charles fan, but I'm also a Seb fan. Seb's my OG fandom, you know, and I am a Seb fan, and I appreciate that he had a really good race, and it's not his quote-unquote fault that the strategy fell into his lap. He still had to do everything right. He still had to have the outlap of his life. He still had to run mistake-free. He still had to have great restarts. He still had to cut through the field. Because he came out in traffic.
Restarts on hard compound too.
Yeah.
But this is what's the best for Formula One. This is what makes it so exciting. Because who is a guy? Like, so you have a Formula Racing driver. Who is his biggest competitor?
Who's biggest?
His teammate.
Yeah, your teammate. Yeah,
Each driver. It's his teammate on every single team.
Right.
So when you're seeing competition between the teammates, it's even better almost than seeing competition between other teams. Even when you see drama on it, like that's like drama and all this kind of stuff. It's what makes sports like great and amazing.
Sure.
The personal, like,
absolutely.
To me, that was like one of the top five races, at least of the year. I love that. Everything about it.
Yeah. And I agree. And that goes back to like what we were saying about it being boring is that like,
what if you're a Charles fan, you're gutted, obviously.
Yeah. I was gutted. Yeah. I mean, just because I wanted so bad for him to win three in a row, pole three in a row wins. But and the end of the day, I mean, it was the strategy that made him lose. And you can kind of rest on that and be like, he didn't lose the race. It was not like he made a mistake. You know, the strategy fell into Sebastian's hands. So
but he kind of played the victim at the end there, which I think was good. He put up enough of a fight on the radio to show, like, hey, like, don't do this again. And then he was very political and smart at the end, where he said nothing bad. I really liked how he acted.
That's why I'm such a fan of him, because he's so perfect. He always says such a perfect thing.
I am too, especially since after watching these review shows, I hate Lewis Hamilton now.
Oh, do you? You're a Lewis hater? Good.
Scumbag. Yeah.
Good.
He completely pulled in Antonio Brown. He posted all the McLaren schematics on his Twitter page.
When?
I think this was 2012. Really through it, but they say that this could be the end of him in McLaren. He had a different setup from his teammate, and he got out qualified, and he showed all this proprietary data.
Pulled on Antonio Brown. I don't know if you can go that far.
I think you can.
That's saying a lot. But yeah, no, I agree.
So one thing that was funny, before we get ahead of ourselves in the race, I think it was like lap 20, 25, one of the announcers was like, some of the Twitter people are tweeting in, when are we going to see the first Mercedes fake pit stop.
Yeah.
But so there were Mercedes none. Didn't do a fake pit stop, but Hamilton came on the air or radio and said he was going to pit and then didn't. So,
they still sort of had a fake pit stop.
Fake pit stop streak continues, at least.
Yeah, that's so funny. I didn't realize that.
My account. But yeah, and how about what made the race so crazy was midway you got Giovinazzi
leading the race.
And I wrote this down. This was the first time a non-Red Bull, Mercedes, or Ferrari led at any point in any Grand Prix since 2015.
Yeah.
And that was Williams.
Yeah, yeah. Williams in 2014 in the first year of the turbo hybrid era when they were actually they lucked into being good in 2014. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I know. That's good crazy. That's crazy.
Good for them. Outperformed Kimi. I mean, because Kimi crashed out, I think, after the second safety car.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, apparently he was the third safety car. Yeah. Yeah.
He was, but I think he was out racing Kimi to that point. Grosjean had another kill. He took out Russell. Just mm-hmm. what he goes wants to race and take out other cars. He was successful.
Yeah,
doing that. Doesn't have to finish races. So
right. Man, when I first saw that, I wasn't totally convinced that was completely Grosjean's fault. I'm not so sure that was totally Grosjean's fault. I don't know about that.
But since you talked about the lead car thing, he wasn't the lead car, so I'm always kind
of... But he was alongside him, though. They were alongside each other. You're right, he wasn't the lead car. And it was, I think it was probably like 70-30, 60-40 Grosjean.
Well, how often is Russell getting into wrecks unprovoked with other guys 2/3 into the race racing for 16th?
Well, the thing is, and this is why this whole thing about driving somebody off the track and just closing the door on somebody has become so controversial. Like Charles did to Lewis in Monza, is that like nowadays apparently you can just drive someone off the track, and that's what Russell sort of did to Grosjean. Really.
Because they're not getting penalized for it.
Yeah, exactly. And Grosjean
but
had his wheels. He had his front wheels alongside the rear wheels of Russell, and which is not fully alongside, but it's alongside enough, you know. And Russell just kind of kept drifting and kept drifting. He didn't leave it to space, as Fernando Alonso would say. And so I don't know. I think that Russell was taking the racing line, but Grosjean was there alongside him. I think, though, what it boils down to is that Grosjean is the attacking car in that case. He's off the racing line, and Russell has the racing line, and he's the lead car. So in that case, the impetus is with Grosjean to back out of that, especially when there's a wall. So if there is a wreck, it's kind of one of those situations where it's like one of us has to back out or we're going to wreck. Okay, well, you're the attacking car and you're the one running out of space. I'm on the racing line. You're the one that should back out. And right. Grosjean is like, well, I'm not backing out, so we're going to wreck, and they wreck. So I would blame right. Grosjean, but when I first watched it, I watched it 2 or 3 times and I was like, I don't know. Because when it first happened, you're like, ah, Grosjean. And then I watched it again, and I was like, well, maybe it wasn't Grosjean's fault. But, yeah, it is Grosjean.
Yeah, that slogan's actually printed at Haas headquarters.
What?
I'm not backing out. We're going to wreck.
if you don't back out, we're going to wreck. Yeah.
Yeah, especially, I mean, I could see if you're racing for points or whatever, but, like, I think they were racing for, like, 16th at that point. Russell probably wasn't even expecting him to make for that pass. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's just too many DNFs for a guy that you just locked up for the future on a team that's underperforming.
No, I know, right? Isn't that funny? The first race after he had just been re-signed. Yeah.
Patriotically get by.
Yeah. But yeah, interesting race, man. I don't think it was boring either. I think it was interesting to watch him kind of creep around for a while. And like Christian Horner said, it was kind of like boxers tiptoeing around the ring, like throwing jabs at each other and Ferrari clearly had an obvious strategy what they wanted to do. They didn't want a pit window to open up. They were waiting for that pit window to open so that waiting so that they could open a pit window and then kind of slot into it. And I don't know. I'm cynical, but I think they kind of had the plan the whole time once that Seb qualified third to finish 1-2 and undercut Charles, just because I don't know, maybe not. I mean, I'm giving them.
There's too many things that have to go perfect.
Yeah, that's true. That's what I was going to say. I was just going to say that because you have to give the Ferrari strategists a lot of credit that they probably don't deserve, because Ferrari strategists don't really deserve a lot of credit like that right now at this point in the season.
I don't think they expected to have Vettel at that pace. I mean, and then I just think once they had him there, they're just kind of like, we just kind of have to let this play out. Like, I mean, I could have seen. So what if it happens in reverse? How are people reacting?
If Charles undercuts Seb? Charles
is the new, because he's just so much faster. His outlap was so good because he's a new young talent, and So I mean,
maybe
it's really
I could see it going both ways.
Yeah, I'm just so pumped for the battle for the rest of the year, because you have Charles, Max, and Sebastian all within 6 points of each other in the driver's standing. So we may not have a challenge for first and second, but there's a battle for that third spot.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's a good point. And the dynamic between Sebastian and Charles is going to be interesting now, because it had been a year since Sebastian had won a race, or almost literally a calendar year. Now Sebastian's won a race. Is he back? Does he have the monkey off his back? All of that. I don't think that's necessarily true, especially with the way he won this race. But now he certainly has some of the doubters not questioning him quite as vehemently as they were before. It'll be interesting to see the way that he responds in Russia, which is a similar track to Singapore. It's not quite the same, but it's similar in certain ways.
Downforce favoring.
Sort of a street circuit. Yeah. Will Ferrari be good again in Russia? If so, then will Sebastian take pole in Russia? All those questions arise now, that how will Sebastian respond for the rest of the season? And not only that, because we know Sebastian is a four-time world champion, like you mentioned earlier, but now how does Charles respond? Because he's young and he's never been in a situation where
fire's just lit under him.
You think so?
I can imagine. Yeah, because now he's like, man, I thought I kind of showed enough, but no. And he's a fighter. He's not like, but I mean, dude, he's only got 6 points ahead of Sebastian Vettel. Like, they're basically 1-2. Like, they're basically even.
Yeah, so, but I mean, he has outqualified Sebastian 8 times in a row.
Yeah.
8 races in a row. What if he just goes and gets pole again in Russia?
But not every race like Russell over Kvyat.
You mean, what's his name?
Sorry.
Yeah. Dude, how about just another pole in Russia for Leclerc, though?
Well, so I'm looking at last year's results. So it looked like it was a Mercedes, Ferrari, 1, 2, 3, 4. Bottas won last year.
Yeah, he did.
Then it was Vettel, Kimi, but no Red Bull. Then it was Magnussen and Ocon.
Yeah, Russia can throw up some strange results. It's a weird race. It can be a very processional race, kind of boring, especially because there's very low tire degradation, so it's usually like a long one-stopper. I don't think the drivers like the track a lot. I don't remember a lot about...
Is it kind of cookie cutter track?
Yeah, exactly.
A little Mario Kart.
It's a Tilkadrome. Herman Tilke designed it. You'll hear that name come up a lot if you haven't already. He designed a lot of the modern tracks, like Malaysia and China and Russia and Singapore. He designed Singapore too. And Austin. He designed Austin. Some of them make for good racing, and some of them are...
What does Formula One out of the U.S. think of the Austin track?
It's good. They like it a lot.
They like it?
Yeah, the drivers love it. Yep.
They like getting, they like the barbecue and the cowboy hat.
Yeah, I mean, specifically, the track itself is good for racing, and the drivers love to drive on it. Yeah, it's a very popular track.
Isn't it kind of like, do you know what Tour 18 is in golf?
No. Oh, like a collection of different holes. Yes, that is true.
Isn't that kind of what he did with sort the Austin track?
Yes, he did. Yeah. It's kind of a collection of different famous turns. And, but Tilke's circuits are all kind of like that. And that's why Tilke's circuits are kind of cookie cutter, like you said, is because Tilke has these... has these sort of affectations that he relies on his like long straights that end in slow hairpins, for example, and then a twisty bit, and then a long swooping curve, if you looked at all the Tilke circuits, they would all share these characteristics that look really similar. And so he's kind of cut and pasted those. Oh man, I need to plug in my computer. Hold on. Pause. Okay, that was easy. But they also borrowed famously Maggots and Becketts from Silverstone. In fact, that's where I want to sit. Speaking of which, dude, are you going or what? You going to get some tickets?
Yeah, I don't have tickets yet, but I'm not missing that shit. I don't know if I'll maybe be there for the race, but I'm at least going to practice or qualifying, or I'm going to be there.
Okay. Because I want to sit at the Maggots and Becketts complex.
Where it's like, get a bunch of Hoth merch.
I know. Yes, me too. Especially now that they're rid of the Rich Energy.
Yeah.
Horribleness. So I don't know what else about the race, man. Not boring. If you're really into Formula One, not boring. So long, dude. I felt like I had watched for an hour and a half, and it was only halfway over, and I was like, gee, this is a long race. I watched it in two stints. I watched half of it and then paused it and then watched the other half later because I was just like, this is long.
50 laps would have been perfect because I think it still would have brought a one stop into play or a two stop. Lando Norris, another great race.
Yeah, okay, that's worth mentioning for sure.
Can't wait to see him move again to another team.
Mm.
Or
just McLaren continue to get better. That would be cool too. Or get Mercedes engines, which I've heard rumored that McLaren might switch to Mercedes engines. Like they used to have.
That's what they had when they were good.
Exactly. So yeah.
It would make sense.
Yeah. And Renault engines aren't going to compete. Yeah. Midfield battle was exciting for a while. Ricardo was racy. The Toro Rosso's and Racing Points had some battles in the midfield. Magnussen had a good race for a while before he fell back. He got a plastic bag stuck in his car, apparently, or something like that. But the midfield battle was exciting after the first pit stop for a while. Sainz, I guess we mentioned already, had his race ruined, which, by the way, what an unfortunate thing to happen to Sainz to, on the very first lap of the race, go a lap down and have to race around that track for 2 hours a lap down and still fight your way back. One thing I didn't mention in the preview pod with Caitlin that I think is worth mentioning here today, or just mentioning in general, is just, like you said already, just how physical this track is. How hot it is, how bumpy it is, how twisty it is, just how tough it is. Which is kind of neat, question. I think.
Is there no power steering at all?
They do have limited power steering in the cars now, but there used to not be. Yeah.
But it's like driving like a 84 Jeep Wrangler, probably.
Right. It's like tough.
Especially if you're going slow.
And some drivers think that there should not be power steering. That you should remove all driver aids. There should be the fewer driver aids, the more challenging it is, and that's kind of the sport. There should be,
that's the point.
Yeah,
to get the best raw driver that can wrangle the machine around the fastest.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just crazy. These things are literally the opposite of airplanes. They're designed to stick push to themselves the ground, into the ground. So this is just one, like, just off the cuff, crazy thought from somebody who's maybe not a fan. They get going so fast that the downforce is so much that they're scraping the bottom of the car, which I love. Yeah, I love the sparks. I love like, how can that make sense from an energy loss standpoint? Like, why not? Like, why are they letting it get to that point? Why not just raise the car a little bit or reduce the suspension travel so you're not actually dragging your car across the ground when you're reaching your critical point?
That's a good question. I know that the sparks are actually semi-intentional for show. They're actually semi-fraudulent.
It's a skid. It's just because it's a skid plate underneath, I think, that creates that sort of friction.
Yeah.
That makes it. But one of my favorite things is watching when they show those the rear cam, the show of the rear suspension, where you see when it gets going fast and how much lower the car gets.
Oh, because it can like suck down to the ground.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, there's a whole, the whole anecdote about how they have so much downforce that they can drive upside down. Like if they're given the right scenario, they because actually, they can stick to the ceiling.
100 miles an hour, they could easily do it.
Yeah.
Depending on, which is crazy, which makes so much sense with why there's such a big fuss about following cars close behind and tire wear. Because imagine being at a plane in constant turbulence, and that's what these drivers are in.
Oh, sure. Especially at Singapore, bumping. And that's another thing, too. And they were talking, I think Martin Brundle was talking about this. It's so physical, not just steering the car and getting jerked side to side and everything.
The heat.
But you're strapped in so hard to this, you know, you're just ratcheted in to this car. You know, it's not comfortable. And then you're bumping up and down like 2 inches off of the road. You know, you're just getting jarred up and down, like bone shattering, jarring.
And you're in a weird position. You're like sitting, your legs are straight out in
up
front
above
of you.
Your heart. Yeah, not even straight in front of you, but even up above, like in the height of your head. And
oh, wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah. And I mean, it is horribly uncomfortable, and they just crank those seat belts so tight that you're just like, you know, into the seat, and you're just like getting shaken around in the chair. And dude, speaking of the downforce, get this, you're gonna like this. This is cool. I read this in Ross Braun's book. Okay, so these cars are so aerodynamically sophisticated that driving along, they stop faster just by lift. If you're driving a Formula One car and you lifted your foot off of the accelerator, not even using the brake, you just lifted your foot off of the accelerator, the car would stop so fast that it would be equivalent of emergency braking in like a Porsche 911 at like 120 miles an hour. Like if you're driving,
is that a speed at high speed?
Because the aerodynamics
is only as good as your speed you're going, and you know it's driving.
I forgot exactly what speed he was saying. Like let's say the cars are going equal. Let's say the cars, they're both going 100 miles an hour. Your Porsche is going 100 miles an hour. And the Formula One car is going 100 miles an hour. You lift off the accelerator and you go, huh, because the car just sucks you to the ground.
Which makes sense why they go through tires and on 200 miles.
Dude, there's all kinds of anecdotes like that. They say hitting the brakes in a Formula One car is like getting into a wreck at 40 miles an hour.
And imagine late hitting them to overtake somebody in the outside of a chicane.
Yeah. It can squeeze the tears out of your tear ducts, breaking.
So I saw the little drink, the little camelback go into their helmet. Like, do you think that's not the whole time? Because what if, imagine you're racing and like you lose grip on your little hydration pack and you're stuck the next 50 laps without water.
What happened last year was, I forget who this happened to. I think maybe it was Carlos Sainz. The drink thing wouldn't stop squirting water into his mouth, so he had to keep drinking it the whole race. And he just had a belly full of water. Yeah. Himself. Yeah. One race, Kimmy's broke. Yeah. But I forget who that happened to. But yeah, he just had to keep swallowing water the whole time while he was racing.
See, guys, that's the stuff you get on Formula Fun. You don't get that.
Right.
You don't get that spot.
Formula
you don't get
Fun,
that on,
baby. Formula Fun. But yeah, Singapore, that'd be a fun race to go to. Caitlin and I have this daydream about like going, like every year we go to a different race and we're like slowly like save up budget, you know, like we'll go to US this year, Mexico next year, Canada the year after that, slowly make our way around the world. Start here in North America.
Yeah. You know. Before you're spending $6,000 for a trip.
No kidding, God. Yeah, just on tickets alone. Man, I don't really know what else to say. It's kind of a boring race, I guess. I don't think it was boring, but there's not a lot to.
I think we covered it pretty well.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see. One thing we didn't really talk about was how Mercedes kind of dropped the ball on their strategy. How had Mercedes pitted like Ferrari pitted, they just would have undercut Ferrari. You know, if they had been the first team to pit, they simply would have just undercut Ferrari because they had the fastest cars all weekend. They had the fastest cars on race pace, and they simply just dropped the ball, which is very un-Mercedes-like to simply have a bad strategy and drop the ball and then not pit and then go long. Even when Hamilton's sitting there in the car going, let's undercut him.
No, so Lewis saying let's undercut him was this fake pit stop. But it seems Mercedes the whole year, their strategy is long, which makes sense because Lewis is a better driver and he can manage his tires way better than another racer. So you might as well leverage that advantage.
Maybe.
Lewis was the one saying, don't pull me out. I want to stay out. Tires are good. Then he was like, tires are shit, but I want to stay out.
Well, so, but what I've heard is that Lewis was wanting to undercut all weekend long. Lewis was saying, if we don't start on pole, I want to undercut even if we end up in traffic. That's what he claimed, at least, after the race.
I think Mercedes knew that, like, we're on equal aerodynamic levels for this race and that we're outpowered. So, I mean,
yeah,
let's not risk not getting a podium.
Yeah.
As you see how quickly, I mean, Bottas didn't get a podium.
No, so. Neither of them. Yeah, Mercedes fourth and fifth, just like everyone predicted.
Yeah.
Right? Man, this has got me excited for next year. I know we're looking forward already, but we've still got about 6 more races. But man, if Ferrari can keep this pace up and Red Bull will continue to improve, McLaren will continue to improve, could be a pretty exciting 2020.
Yeah, to bring back the stock analogy, if Formula One's a stock, you're definitely buying it as opposed to the beginning of the season.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely getting more exciting.
Yeah, that's funny. That's a good way to think about the teams. I'm buying McLaren right now. I'm selling Haas. What are you looking at?
Yeah, honestly, I'm looking at the constructor standings to see what else is going on. Top three is locked up, but...
Yeah.
And McLaren's pretty much locked up fourth, but there's a good battle between...
Which is super impressive for McLaren, yeah.
Well, so Haas is ninth, dude.
I know, it's really bad.
And they're not even close, but there is a good battle between Toro Rosso Racing Point and Alfa Romeo.
Yeah.
So, and then there's Williams. I mean, how long can they last with 1 point?
Yeah, I don't know, man. Williams, they need to make a drastic decision about what they're going to do.
I'm not even going to say it. I'm not going to say it.
Okay. Went to the driving range today.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Hit him pretty good.
Did you speed that swing up a little bit? Widen that stance?
No. I didn't widen the stance. I don't know if I sped my swing. I hit him good, though.
That's all that matters.
Mm-hmm.
That's how you get better.
We need to get back out there.
I have not touched the club since Lagrange. Yeah, so I ate barbecue. I ate that barbecue for the next 2 days. It was all my meals.
Good. Yeah, good. That's what that's all about. You deserved it. You earned it.
Yeah.
New announcement this week. If you want to get in touch with us, send us an email at apowerunit at gmail.com. That's apowerunit@gmail.com. Give us some feedback. Even if you think that we're terrible, that's fine. Let us know. We can take it, I promise. And again, subscribe, leave us a review. Any feedback that you give us helps us. It grows us. We like it, I promise. Until next time, keep your eyes on the apex.